Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Sunday morning edition of the Lombardi Line around the country as we welcome you to Las Vegas in our Circus Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Femi. Femi making the road trip this week, Michael, out to Oxford, watching Cowboy Camp. Michael Lombardi is here. Great to be back with you, Michael, after you had a couple of days off here. And I was thinking to you yesterday, because we were on the air when Joel Embiid got pseudo-posterized there by Puerto Rico. I know that sent a ruffle through the Lombardi household. Great to be back with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he played, 21 minutes, Ben? I mean, that was a lot for him, you know? So it was good. Yeah, I'm sure that we'll continue to see as this goes. It's been fascinating. The game was a lot closer in the first half than I thought it was going to be. But obviously, Anthony Edwards was really good in the second half, and they pulled away. You know, it's interesting how the games are so different on the European level. And it's so much, I mean, I listened to what they said at halftime, Mark Few, the assistant coach, said about the speed of Puerto Rico. And I think that that's something that's really bothersome to the American team, especially when Embiid's on the court.
The last two games, non-covers for the U.S. as giant 30-point and then 36-point favorites, respectively, against South Sudan and then Puerto Rico. U.S. don't cover, but ultimately pull away, win there comfortably to go 3-0 through the group stage, comfortably in as the top seed there into the quarterfinals, where they will take, they'll have an interesting couple of battles coming up, though, with Germany first up in that quarterfinal round. We'll talk more Olympics a little bit later on. We have a great guest list today, though. Excited to get some good NFL takes from Rich Gannon coming up in 15 minutes, the longtime former NFL quarterback. Rich will join us to talk some of the latest quarterback news in training camp and some of the contract extensions recently given over the past week. Also this week, a big stretch for us here on VSiN. College Football Betting Guide is now out, and Jonathan Von Tobel, host of VSiN Primetime, joins us in hour number two, 11:15 Eastern, followed right on top of that by VSiN Tonight host Wes Reynolds, both key contributors to our College Football Betting Guide this year. Excited to get some thoughts there from a couple of very good voices there in CFB. Couple headlines, though, Michael, since we were last together on Thursday, where you have Tyreek Hill and the Miami Dolphins. That was the big contract news here coming out this weekend. Hill and Miami agree to the largest wide receiver contact deal, at least with the total guaranteed money now, over $106 million across the next four seasons here for Hill. The actual extension, $90 million over 3 years, $65 million in guaranteed money. His fellow players voted him the best player in the NFL. If you saw that, NFL Network's top 100 are out on somebody who has been able to completely change a dynamic when he is healthy on the field for Miami. Seems like a situation where, with all the money the Dolphins have been willing to invest in their top players anyway, Michael, makes sense that they would keep one of the most valuable guys in the NFL around here for a few more years.
Well, you know, they didn't add years to the deal, right? They just guaranteed a bunch of money, which is certainly going to be the case. I mean, he's missed two games in the last 3 years, and the last 2 years, he is steadily inclined. I mean, think about this. He went from his last year in Kansas City, he averaged a very pedestrian 11.2 yards per catch. And since then, he's at 14.4, and last year he was at 15.1. And so what he's been able to accomplish goes back to the 2020 season when he was dominating for Kansas City. But he's had a rebirth here in Miami in terms of his production and his ability to dominate the game. And I've been a Tyreek Hill fan forever. I laughed at some of the services that didn't have him as the best receiver in football. Love Justin Jefferson. But let me say this to you very clearly. There's one guy, only one, that when you drive to the stadium on Sunday morning and you're the defensive coordinator playing against Tyreek Hill, you're scared to death because you can't fit. You have no one who can run with him. That's a fact. And his quickness is electrifying. He's got Barry Sanders quickness with Randy Moss speed. You rarely see that in a player. And his ability to catch the ball, his toughness to go inside, and the way they move him around in Miami with that motion that he's able to get such a great start. It's really a problem, and you can't get your – you could say, well, we got to double him. It's hard to double him because it's hard to get your hands on him.
He's not a one-trick pony either. This isn't a guy who's just taking short drag crossers over the middle and then going, and he's getting 9-10 yards after the catch. This is a guy who, you look at some of the next-gen stats NFL provides, he was fourth last year in team's air yard percentage. So those are balls further down the field, and that's considering when you've got a really good wide receiver also on your team in a Jalen Waddle, yet he'll still – garnered almost half of the Dolphins' air yards down the field a season ago. NFL Network with that top on 100 being released on the players here. And like, I get why. I mean, I also would say too, I mean, you're someone who can appreciate the speed, but watching guys in person, I'm sure for players, they would tell us, for those who pick Tyreek Hill number one over where Patrick Mahomes is, we'll get to that in a second because Mahomes was down at four for Kansas City. But I'm sure a lot of players, Mike, were sitting there and going, yeah, you guys can't really appreciate as much as the speed looks fast on TV, how fast it actually is for us in person, yeah. The type of athleticism that is just incomprehensible for the average viewer.
Yeah, and it's hard to take him out of the game. I mean, think about this. He's a wide receiver playing on the outside, and he's got a 70% catch percentage, which is rare. I mean, he's got a career 67%. He had it at 67% in Kansas City. It's gone up to almost 70%, just 69.8 in Miami. So you could sit there and say, well, we can't, you know, it's hard to get him the ball. You know, we could take him out of the game. No. And, you know, this isn't a guy that they run the ball with. He had six carries last year. Six is all he did. The year before, he had seven. This was a running back at Oklahoma State, which is really remarkable. When Andy Reid drafted him in the fifth round, everybody raised their hands up in the air and said, how can you do that based on what happened at Oklahoma State in terms of his former girlfriend or wife or whatever? And yet they did. And they converted him into a wide receiver, which is remarkable. Remember, his first year in the league as a rookie, he barely averaged 10 yards a catch. So this speed has really blossomed down the field, and he's a problem. I mean, he makes this offense go, and if you're going to give Tua what you gave Tua, you had to step up to the plate. This was one of the easiest contracts to do. What I'm surprised was is Rosenhaus was able to get this new deal with all this guaranteed and not add any more years on it, because he will be 30 after the season's over.
Yeah, 65 in the guaranteed money now, 90 again over 3 years. $106.5 million is the guaranteed over the next 4 years now. But as you just stated, Michael, no additional years added on to the end of that existing contract there for Tyreek Hill. I know you have thoughts on the at least the top five of the NFL Network Top 100. Again, these are all voted on by the players. It's always a fun offseason topic for us. Our producer, Elliot Bowen, made the great quote before the show that what are they going to do? Keep showing Super Bowl 46 on repeat during the offseason? No, they can't do it. They got to do new content. Lamar Jackson, number two, is voted on by the players. Baltimore quarterback ahead of Patrick Mahomes at four. Christian McCaffrey sandwiched in the middle at number three, and Myles Garrett of Cleveland, number five. That was getting a whole lot of Twitter flack, at least. The players saying, wow. Oh, yeah, Lamar Jackson better than Patrick Mahomes. I'm sure you have thoughts.
I mean, look, nobody's been a bigger Lamar Jackson fan than I have throughout his entire career. But there's no way you can take a guy who's won three Super Bowls and put him behind a guy that hasn't won any. And so it just doesn't make any sense at all. And to put him behind McCaffrey is even, you know, I mean, Christian McCaffrey's a great player. He's really what I've often said about McCaffrey. He's a tremendous role player. What he is an accessory. He's one of the great accessories because he highlights the offense. He does the offense when it runs through him, it's not as effective. Mahomes, obviously, you could make the case that Tyreek is the most disruptive player in the National Football League. I'm not going to argue that, but Mahomes being four, come on, please stop. I mean, you know, this is what happens when it becomes a popularity contest on the voting. And so I think, to me, we all know what's right and what's wrong here.
I mean, we say good morning to our friends watching us on Masson in the DMV. I mean, the most diehard Baltimore Raven fans most likely are sitting there going, I mean, look, we love Lamar. He's awesome. But Mahomes is still, I mean, he's clearly a better player on that. It leads us to our poll question of the day, too, Michael, because we wanted to, you know, we've been stoking the fire here over the last couple of weeks. Different poll questions as far as it relates to guys still looking for their guaranteed money and extensions on their respective deals. We had a poll talking the quarterbacks that have been recently extended earlier in the week. Now let's look at the three main wide receivers still looking for those fresh deals. CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, Brandon Ayuk. Which wide receiver? Poll now up. You can vote at M. Lombardi NFL on Twitter. Which wide receiver is most important to their team success in 2024? Do you go Lamb, Chase, or Ayuk?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd be shocked if it's not Chase who wins this, right? And look, the Tyreek Hill contract has nothing to do with Lamb or Ayuk. It has everything to do with Chase, because you could make the case that Chase is as good as Hill. I'm not going to go there, but you could. His agent could. His value to the team with T. Higgins on the other side is important. So, look, all these guys, the one that does it really, Ayuk had has had a good season. He's not had a great career. Lamb's had a great season. He's building a great career. So I think, to me, Chase has been exactly what the Bengals had hoped he would be. You know, I would have taken Penei Sewell in that draft over the receiver. it's worked out for both teams. But to me, Cincinnati's still trying to solve their offensive line problem. Mims has been hurt for them at right tackle. Whether Trent Brown can come in and play or not, that remains to be seen. So there's still questions about their offensive line, but they're going to have to get this deal done as he kind of doesn't practice and moves around the camp without doing anything.
Yeah, clearly, as far as team success, because of all that is around Brandon Ayuk, you throw him out of the equation. Not that he's not a great player, but there's so many other weapons around the 49ers for an Ayuk. I would say the gap, I agree with you, Chase is number one, but Lamb, to me, the gap isn't as far, simply because if we're talking value to the team, you think about how many times Lamb is able to get Dak Prescott completely out of jail, and what he brings is a release valve to a quarterback that is going to have as much pressure as about any quarterback, especially given all of his saga around the potential deal and lack thereof so far for a Prescott extension in Dallas. That's where, at least if you're talking team value, guy who grabbed 135 balls last year, was there every single time Prescott needed him, a huge part of the Cowboys' regular season success. I would say it's a little bit closer, at least in my mind, when you're talking specifically based on the team and how it is set up. When you think about the quarterback Lamb has, as opposed to Chase, who has, obviously, it's a guy in Joe Burrow coming off injury, yet still much more proven with a higher ceiling than we've seen out of Prescott in his past so far through the career.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, look, Dallas Guyton is already missing practice, and any young offensive lineman who didn't play a lot at Oklahoma is missing practice. That's going to really sting them. It'll be interesting to see how they recover. It's a good thing Femi's headed down there today to get them straightened out and kind of sorted through on what they need to do as they build this team forward. So hopefully Femi to the rescue. Thank you.
Well, I can't wait to hear the check-in on Monday in the GM Shuffle, how that all went for Femi. Hopefully hopefully the traffic ain't too bad coming back tonight from Oxnard there. Fans out in droves at Cowboy training camp. We'll have a lot of training camp news to talk about. Injuries are a big focus of that, as we'll welcome in Rich Gannon, former NFL quarterback, to the show right after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is available now. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams in FBS, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up now and receive both the college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount price of just $175. Or sign up on a monthly subscription. Get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Do not miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. VSIN.com/subscribe. Just getting underway on our Sunday morning edition of the Lombardi Line. Welcome to those of you watching on the Marquee Sports Network in Chicago, Masson out in the Northeast in the DMV. Michael Lombardi's here. I'm Ben Wilson in for Femi from Las Vegas in our Circus Sportsbook studios. Our first guest of the day, pumped to welcome in Rich Gannon back on the show here. You hear him on SiriusXM, longtime NFL quarterback. Great to welcome in Rich as we go out to our progressive guest line. And we started the show, Rich, talking the poll question of our day here of the three wide receivers here looking for a new deal. Which is most important to their team success, CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, Brandon Ayuk? As a former QB who can certainly appreciate an elite dynamic wide receiver, which of those three would you go with as far as those guys still looking for a deal this year?
They're all such great players. I mean, CeeDee Lamb, you look at the impact that he's had on that team. They've won 12 games each of the last 3 years. They just can't seem to get over the hump in the postseason. But I'll tell you what, you look at Brandon Ayuk, and I've had this conversation with Michael. I think the 49ers, without question, and it's not even close, have the best and most unselfish group of wide receivers when it comes to the running game. I mean, just watch that group out there block in the running game. And I just think it's incredible. You look at Brandon Ayuk, you look at Deebo Samuel, you look at Juwan Jennings, they knock people around in the running game. So from a receiver's perspective and somebody who appreciates the importance of the running game, I think Brandon Ayuk is really important to that team's success, as is the left tackle. You think about Trent Williams and their record with him and without him in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's going to be interesting to see what the Niners eventually have to do, because the rubber needs to meet the road with all the injuries in their offensive line. that have been going on in camp, with Trent Williams not being there, this is going to be a little bit of a tricky situation, especially opening up against the Jets with their defensive front, which is very good. Let's shift it to quarterbacks, Rich. I mean, we expect Jaden Daniels is going to start in the preseason opener against the Jets. How much of the preseason really playing in those games against very vanilla coverages will help these young quarterbacks?
Well, Michael, I just think that everyone's perspective on the preseason has changed. I think the owners and general managers and head coaches, I think they're fearful to play, you know, their starters. And I think so, you know, you look at so many of these games where, you know, the starters aren't playing in the preseason. It's just a lot different when I was playing. And I also think that, you know, they use these scrimmages prior to the preseason games to really, it's a controlled environment. Nobody's being taken to the ground and they get a lot of work done there. So I personally believe they're important, particularly for a young player, a guy that, you know, just simply doesn't have the experience. You know, Jaden Daniels needs every rep he can get. Now, I'm not suggesting he should play in every preseason game or he should play for a half in each of those games, but he does need to get out there. And even though he's going to be going against a lot of second and third string guys, there's still live reps. There's still important reps. There's still reps that we can gather information. And so, you know, if it were me, I think you can with the play calls, you can kind of control. You know, you're not going to have them taking seven step drops with five man protections. I mean, you can do some things to move the launch point and to feature some quick game and things like that. But I still think those reps are important, even for the veteran quarterbacks. If it were me, I still want to play a little bit in the preseason.
No doubt. One quarterback we will not see in the preseason, and who knows how close to 100% he will be for week one, is Justin Herbert in L.A. What's your perspective, Rich, on that for a guy trying to now get integrated with the new system as Jim Harbaugh comes in for the Chargers and now out with that plantar fascia injury?
You know what's fascinating to me? For the 10th straight season, now think about that, 10 straight seasons, we have 10 or more teams that are going to have a different starting quarterback than the previous season. Fortunately for the Chargers, you know, Justin Herbert isn't going anywhere, and he was the starter last year, but that's a team to keep an eye on, because last year, you know, it wasn't the quarterback that was holding back that team from having a chance. It was the head coach who was, you know, going for it on fourth and one at their own 29-yard line with 14:30 left in the first quarter. You know, so yeah. I think you bring in a head coach that has done it before, that's had a lot of success, not only at Michigan, but in the NFL. He's got a record of 44-19-1 as a head coach. He took his team to the Super Bowl in San Francisco. And I think that's just what the doctor ordered for the Chargers and Justin Herbert. I think Justin Herbert's going to be fine. That's a painful injury, but I think you give him a couple weeks. He's still going to be in the meetings. He's still probably going to be out in the walkthroughs and the practice. But, man, a guy that I think has an unbelievable upside now that he's got some stability around him from a coaching perspective.
No, no questions. How about the Raiders? I know you're going to do preseason football for the Raiders. They have a quarterback battle going on within their camp. Who do you think wins that battle at the end of the time?
You know, Michael, I've had some conversations in the spring with different people in the building, including Antonio Pierce. And now not only did I have that conversation, but you hear the conversations that are coming out there now. And it's all about, well, we want one of them to take the bull by the horn. We want one of them to take ownership. And I think they're two very different players. I think when you look at Gardner Minshew, Gardner is kind of a, you know, free-spirited kind of guy that the players will gravitate towards. You know, he's got some swagger, he's got some juice, he's got a lot of confidence. Aiden O'Connell is more of a reserve guy. He's not going to slam his helmet on the sidelines. He's not going to scream at anybody. And I think they want to see more emotion from Aiden O'Connell. They want to see him take more ownership of the football team. And to me, it's really going to boil down to which of those two quarterbacks, you know, grabs the bull by the horns here the next couple of weeks in the preseason. And I think that's the painful decision that the Raiders are trying to make. John Madden used to always say, when you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. I just think it's a scary situation to be in when you're in a division that has, you know, arguably the best player in the league and Patrick Mahomes. We just talked about Justin Herbert. Denver's trying to get their quarterback situation right. So, you know, when you don't know for sure, and we're into August already, who your starting quarterback is, that's not a great position to be in.
He is Rich Gannon with us on our Progressive guest line right now, talking quarterbacks around training camp here in the NFL. At Rich Gannon 12 is where you follow him. Curious your take on the situation in Carolina, too, where I don't know how much we'll actually see because of what you talked about here, Bryce Young throw in the preseason. But you know, how much do you see Dave Canales and Brad Idzik, now the new OC and head coach, respectively, getting out of a guy who struggled so mightily in his first year in Carolina, but now admittedly getting a fresh voice there in year number two?
Well, I think that's the reason Dave got the job. I mean, the success that he had with Baker Mayfield in Tampa, the fact that Bryce Young really struggled last year under Frank Reich and with a couple different play callers. And I think when you go back and really look at Bryce Young, the footwork was atrocious. The fact that he was able to get away with it for as long as he did last year, the team around him wasn't very good, the receiving core, the offensive line. I think they tried to address some of those areas. And I think, you know, for Dave, the most important thing is getting Bryce Young back up on the horse, getting him comfortable, teaching him, and more importantly, erasing some of the bad habits that he had last year. I mean, just sitting in the pocket, flat-footed. The problem that they're going to have is the guy's 5'10", very similar to the situation that the Cardinals have in the desert. You know, you have a 5'10" quarterback, and Michael will tell you, there's not a lot of teams that have had 5'10" quarterbacks that have played a long time at a high level. And that's my concern about Bryce Young. This is a big man's game. I was 6'3", and I had problems, you know, over the offensive line and seeing downfield at times. So, you know, you got to change the launch point. You got to do some things creatively. I think one of the things that could help Bryce Young, and he's not comfortable doing it, but you have to get him under center. When he's not under center, it compromises what you can do and limits what you can do in the running game. And they have to be able to run the ball more effectively. But, you know, hey, I'm not coaching that team, but there's a lot of work to be done down there in Carolina.
Rich, you're going to go watch the Raiders versus the Vikings. What's your sense of the Viking quarterback battle that's going on between McCarthy and Donald?
Michael, I don't know how it's going to play out. I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, the social media. One day, you know, they say that, you know, J.J. McCarthy had an awful day. The next thing you know, he had 5 red zone touchdowns. I mean, my gosh, it's training camp practice. You know, it's unbelievable that people, and even the fans here in Minnesota, I think are clamoring for J.J. McCarthy. They like Sam Darnold, and why not? He's a young guy. I think he's 26 years old. He's a 6th year in the league. He developed some bad habits at SC. He turned the ball over a bunch, and he did the same thing with the Jets and Carolina, and that's why he's on his 4th team. I think going to San Francisco last year was a good thing for him, sitting and watching and learning behind him, Brock Purdy, being with Brian Greasy and Kyle Shanahan. I think he benefited from that. I think Kevin O'Connell does a good job with the quarterback position. But I don't trust Sam Darnold. I don't trust Sam Darnold to take care of the football. I don't think Sam Darnold can play 17 games. And I think we're going to see J.J. McCarthy sooner rather than later.
Great insights from Rich Gannon joining us here on the Lombardi Line. You see him, too, on the Vegas Raiders preseason telecast as well. Rich, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rich.
The best thing.
Preseason not the same, Mike, without Rich on the Packer TV broadcast. Rich and Kevin Harlan together up
him
in
and his partner,
Green Bay.
Kevin Harlan, yeah.
No doubt. We'll have some injury news going around the league, get some training camp takes from Michael when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back from downtown Las Vegas, our Circus Sportsbook studio. Big thanks to our first of 3 guests today, Rich Gannon. Awesome insights on the state of quarterback play around the league as we welcome you back. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Femi. Michael Lombardi is here. We haven't talked, Michael, since Thursday. We were previewing the Hall of Fame game. Probably the biggest thing that came out of that is a headache for bettors and bookmakers, for that fact, with the game getting postponed, actually canceled, shortened at the end of the third quarter, or just before the end of the third quarter due to all the severe weather in Canton. But more importantly was the new kickoff rule we got to see for the first time. And it was a little bit, I'd say, underwhelming, at least, you know, based on the results. We had one kickoff return past the 30-yard line. I'm curious your take on how that looked actually in reality there for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it looked awkward. It's going to take a lot for me to get used to it. I never liked it from the beginning because I think the onside kick, the surprise onside kick, is an important play in football, especially when you're trying to manage a game where you need to gain an advantage. I mean, look, did the Saints beat the Colts without the onside kick? I don't know. You know, I think to me in that Super Bowl, that was the difference. You know, they needed to steal a possession somewhere, somehow, and they did, and they were able to make that play to start the second half. I think you take away that element of football. I'm not sure the injury rate's going to go down because I think the collisions are going to be as violent as they ever were, even though you're keeping the players close together. So, look, you know, it's going to be fun to watch moving forward how it kind of goes. Thursday night, we've got Carolina up at New England. We got Detroit at the Giants. I think, to me, that's going to will lend itself to see as we go, and I hope the league's looking at it. You know, there's so much made about this motion rule, Ben. Have you followed this at all?
Yeah.
And the league says they haven't changed the motion rule, whereas a website out there has said they have. I'm going to go with the league on this one.
We've heard, too, Mike McDaniel has made comments at practice this week for Miami. That's a team that is very much being put in the spotlight because of their usage of motion. And, you know, he's basically alluded to the fact, we expect to do things our way, but we're also very much aware of being very, very much on the lookout for how the league early in the year is going. And they'll learn a lot from preseason, how the officials are interpreting, all of those rules, too. I would also say, too, on the surprise onside kick, I mean, like the Andy Reid, the first game with Philadelphia, week one, 2000, onside kick on the opening kickoff, which Philadelphia recovered. Like, you're never going to have awesome moments like that where you see the unknown, the out of nowhere sort of play take place. I also kind of figure, because the NFL, they want more action on these kickoffs. After a year, if it goes the way we think it will, which is a bunch of 10 to 17 yard returns, basically, maybe the occasional touchdown, simply because if you break that first wave of tacklers, you're likely going to be gone. It's going to look a lot like USA rugby against New Zealand, that crazy buzzer beater winner in the bronze medal match. Kind of feels early, Michael. I realize it's just been one game of data here, but it feels like it has the potential for like a one and done type rule thing where the NFL goes, all right, that was a fun experiment. Didn't really do much for us. We're back to the basics here.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, to me, I think it's not kind of what you want, but I think the league obviously is trying to do their mightiest to protect, the safety of the players, which I'm all for. I'm just not sure this does it.
No doubt. As far as some injuries going on throughout training camp, let's get into the biggest one from the last couple of days, which is in L.A. Mike Palm and I were on yesterday, Michael. We had a good back and forth. Mike says it was back page news, not a big deal. It's a preseason. He'll be good. I feel a little more strongly on the perspective from Justin Herbert's angle. When you are the key piece of a team that has so much to build on roster-wise, so many holes on that roster, that's a bad look to now start your regular season. You will not have any preseason reps whatsoever. To me, it's a real thing, at least to watch out for early in the season with a new head coach coming in Jim Harbaugh.
Well, here's where I think Mike Palm might be correct, is usually during the season, and again, I'm not a doctor, but during the season, when you have plantar fasciitis, they inject it, and all it does is get you through the week. And eventually, every time you get an injection in there, it only makes it worse. It only creates more problems. Whereas in preseason now, because he's not going to play in any of the preseason games, their focus is strictly on the opening game. Then he is going to rest it and make sure that he's ready when the Raiders come to town in week one of the season. So I do think that they have enough time to get it done. He's going to get a lot of mental reps. I mean, look, he's got a whole new receiving core with him. So that's going to be a little bit of an issue, too, for them as they kind of go through that process. But I think, to me, because it happened in preseason, they can get this cleared up permanently, whereas in the season, they're managing it.
That's a great point as well. It's a big test, too. Week one, you get one of the better front lines in the league on the other side, and the Raiders against an offensive line that will have a big test on their hands. And Herbert, the report from Adam Schefter, too, is that he's expected to be ready to go for week one, but expected to be in some discomfort for some time with that plantar fascia injury into the regular season. And not the only L.A. team dealing with injury, whether it is key pieces or very important pieces, with the L.A. Rams also across town, Michael. Offensive line, it's just become a war room over there. I mean, you have Jonah Jackson already out with a shoulder injury. That was something we talked about earlier in the week, out at least 6 weeks. Now you have Rob Havenstein, who's banged up. Same deal with Alaric Jackson. So you have now three offensive linemen here expected to have key roles for a quarterback who's not getting any younger, Matthew Stafford. Yeah. Now in week one, a very tough task as well, as we talk about front sevens you're facing as they go to Detroit on Sunday night to open the year.
I think it's one of the most important things we have to monitor during the preseason is whose offensive line is intact. And we see that the Rams have Alex Johnson, their left tackle. He's out. Yeah, Haverstein's out. And Jonah Jackson's out. I mean, they have three of their starting five that are out. knowing that they have to go on the road in Detroit. I suspected that Detroit number would go from 3.5 down to 3 with people betting the Rams, especially with you're getting the hook. But I think it has stopped a little bit because of the uncertainty with the offensive line, especially considering Detroit's going to be a little bit better up front, you know, with the addition of DJ Reader to go along with Hutchinson. Maybe Marcus Davenport will play in the game with McNeil inside. So this front can be pretty good, especially against the run, which they're going to have to run the football effectively. So I am a little bit concerned about that. I love the Rams at 3.5, but these injuries concern me. What also concerns me is San Francisco's offensive line injuries. We know Trent Williams isn't there, but they have a lot of other injuries within their line, and they're talking a lot about it, writing about it. That worries me, especially considering this line with the Jets. I think it opened initially at 7, went down to 6.5. Today it's at 5.5, and I think that's probably going to go even further down as the Jets stay healthy and if San Francisco doesn't get healthy.
And what's the one common thread of all these situations we're talking about here, whether it's quarterback, offensive line injuries? The week one opponent, at the very least, is loaded on the front four. You could extend that especially to the Jets' front seven, the entire defense in front of those respective offenses here in San Francisco. The one big weakness we've always talked about has been the offensive line, and that's why the assumption was a deal and at least a satisfaction for Trent Williams has to get there as a key piece of that. Now you bake in these little nicks and bruises, guys banged up here already so early in camp, Michael. I'm with you. I kind of wonder where that line ends up going because, you know, on the surface, if you're actually comparing rosters here, you would think San Francisco would be more in like the 4.5, 5-point favorite range, but there's still a lot unproven on the Jets with how they failed to manifest everything that was in their favor last year. And San Francisco does have the pedigree as being a defending NFC champion coming back.
Yeah, no question. And I think to me, you know, before I set my power rankings, I have last year's ranking that I have, and certainly the number reflects that. But with San Francisco, with the uncertainty at the receiver, outside receiver, because let's put this in perspective, against the Jets, who have changed a lot of what they've done, they no longer are playing straight cover three. They're going to engage more in man-to-man with DJ Reed along with Sauce Gardner on the outside. That becomes a problem for a team that maybe doesn't have a great outside receiver, the inside part of the field, and then they've got to protect, and you've got to be able to run the football. It's hard to run the ball against the Jets in that 8-man front. So to me, it's a little bit of a tough matchup, especially as the 49ers start this whole new evolution of what they want to do defensively. It'd be interesting to see, you know, Hargrave wasn't healthy at the end of last year. They say he is healthy now and dominating, which really helps inside with Malik Collins to go along with the great Nick Bosa.
No question. One other piece from the NFC West here. This was at least positive injury news, but there was reports a couple days ago, quarterback Geno Smith, he was banged up. He was dealing with hip knee injuries. Those were the reports coming out of Seattle. Had some imaging, and it all came back negative. So good news there for Geno Smith, expected to return to practice in the next few days. But that, you know, he's also talking about offensive line. No injuries there yet, Michael, but of all the units in the NFC West, that's the one O-line that we have the most questions about, the most to prove. And I think we're both pretty high on Seattle this year, but that's the one thing that Mike McDonald, as a new coach, has to get right for Seattle to have success.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question. And one thing Geno gives you is the ability to protect the football, which is really important. And they're going to need that. But I think where Mike McDonald, and I've talked to a lot of people in the league about this, is Ryan Grubb, the new offensive coordinator of Seattle, is really good. They told me at the University of Washington he was instrumental in Michael Penix's success. So if Geno gets healthy, and I think with this offensive line staying healthy, it wasn't last year, with Kenneth Walker, who I think is a great sleeper in fantasy football this year, I think he's going to be a legitimate big-time runner. We're going to talk about him as one of the best backs in the league. I think there's no question that this team can be really good offensively because they have everything you have in place. They've got two young tackles. They've got great skill. They've got a good tight end, and they have two good running backs. I mean, why can't they be a sleeping team in the NFC West? I think they really are going to be good.
Sure thing. It's a great angle, and we have more good angles coming up. We'll talk some college football versus NFL futures with a few teams we've discussed already. Who do we want to bet on more? We'll discuss it next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. Today we're talking all things college football, part of the College Football Betting Guide that is now out, released a few days ago, and some of our experts' favorite futures bets on the national title game. That's part of the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. You get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe, written by Bill Ady, our outstanding COO. That's a great graphic. I always love seeing that from Bills. We're back here on the Lombardi Line, final segment of hour number one. Speaking college football, Michael, we'll get takes from Jonathan Von Tobel. He has a bunch of futures, both in the win totals, conference futures, Heisman, and then Wes Reynolds, who has broken down some additional conferences for us as well, and has a number of Big Ten takes on that. We're excited to get Wes on in hour number two, along with JBT coming up here in about an hour and a half or so. I have a few win totals. We'll start going through those today at the end of the show. Excited to break those down here as well. And we've got some bettor's choice for you today. College football versus NFL futures. We can kind of go rapid fire through here. Let's start, though, with the 49ers and Jets ones that we have on the docket, simply because we just talked about 49ers and Jets that week one Monday night game, Michael. And the Niners, if we're looking to buy an alt over on them, you get about almost 3-1 plus 285 on the over 13.5. Would you rather have that bet, or would you rather have Ohio State to go undefeated in the regular season? That's what the alt over suggests, over 11.5 wins at plus 260. Where would you be at, Michael, if we're looking to decide here as we kick off these NFL versus college football bettor's choice?
You know, I don't like the Niners over 13. To get 14 wins, I don't see that. I think the Niners always have a little bit of a stumbling block at some point. And then Ohio State, Oregon, you know, then you might have to play Oregon twice. You think they could beat Oregon twice? If I lean anywhere here, I'm going to take the Ohio State over 11.5 wins. I think that one. Or to go undefeated. I don't like that one as much, but I'll take Ohio State over San Francisco. Look, you don't have to be – look at the – I think ultimately the last two teams that were the best teams in the conference at Baltimore last year and Buffalo, I mean, let's face it, Baltimore and the best team at the number one seed, San Francisco made it to the finals, but Baltimore didn't. So there's always somebody who's playing better at the end of the year than the number one seed. I think that's usually San Francisco's case. Could they do that? Yeah, I think they could.
I just saw San Francisco got just completely shafted with the schedule. I mean, to me, Denver only has a worse setup. If you combine strength of schedule versus opposing win totals and the rest edges or disadvantages, I mean, San Francisco has this ridiculous stretch where it's all these weeks off short rest. You already have a difficult schedule to begin with. Schedule makers doing no favor for San Francisco, at least with we're talking some of these college football win totals too on the other side. You know, at least that takes away, say, like the conference title game. So you're only talking regular season, which is at least nice. I definitely lean that way, although I'm not betting Ohio State. I think they lose in Eugene there in early October in a game that's basically a pick 'em right now on that. Here's one that's pretty easy for me. Colorado alt over 6.5, that's plus 185. Or do you want the Jets alt over 11.5 at plus 190? So there's only one choice here. It is the Jets. As much as we look at that team and that logo and go, oh, really? You're going to buy in? I mean, you look at the roster up and down, Michael. There's no reason to believe if Aaron Rodgers remains healthy at quarterback and you find some sort of offensive consistency, this Jet team cannot at least threaten 12 wins.
No question. And I think, look, if you look at Colorado, I know they have some very talented player and Hunter and Shadir and all those things, but they've lost a lot of players too. You know, that mass exodus when Deion went in there has created another mass exodus of players wanting to leave there. So I would not go all in on Colorado at all. I think we're going to need to see the Deion honeymoon seems to be over in terms of the recruiting process. Now we'll see how they handle Pat Shurmur, your offensive coordinator. How's that going to work out for you? They lost Mike Zimmer to the Cowboys. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens to Colorado. I'm with you, though. I think this is an easy one. Just go Jets all the way here.
And that's, again, an alt win total. Colorado's normal win total set at 5.5, more even juice. And ceiling feels like 6 wins. Like, getting to a bowl game, given the strength, the depth of the Big 12, will be really impressive for Colorado. I don't see how you get to 7 this year with what Deion Sanders has.
Ben, that Big 12 is good. Arizona's good. You know, there's so many. Kansas State is good. Kansas with Leopold, I mean, they're good. He's such a good coach, and Oklahoma State's good this year. So, you know, TCU was playing for a national championship 2 years ago. We know Sonny Dykes is a good coach. I mean, this is not an easy. Arizona brings back mostly everybody that they had off that team last year that beat Oklahoma. So I think to me, it's going to be really challenging to see that.
We haven't even mentioned Utah, who's the favorite in that conference.
The best team in the conference, right?
Yeah, just over 3-1 to start the year. We also talked today in hour number one, Chargers, Rams. Let's go to the Rams. You have all those O-line injuries, at least in camp here. Rams about even money to make the playoffs. Do you want them or do you want Bama, also about even money to make the college football, the extended playoff, now out to 12 teams?
Well, this is both my, I'm going to take Alabama here. I think the Rams, as we're seeing, are prone to, if they have injuries, it's going to keep them out. Plus Seattle, I think, is a good team. Alabama with 12 teams, I think if Milroe's a good player, I think with Caden DeBoer, who's a very good head coach, I think they should be one of the 12 teams that make the college football playoffs.
I think we're also realizing, too, I mean, Kalen DeBoer, it's like, what more do you have to prove after winning 25 games in 2 years at Washington, a team that was in dire need of somebody to turn that team around? It's not like the drop-off's going to be massive here after Nick Saban retires.
Right, and I think you have to understand Caden DeBoer, too. When he was at Indiana, he put them on the map. He was very successful as their OC there. You know, he was then he goes to Fresno State, successful as a head coach. He was at Augustana, a small school in South Dakota, and was very successful there. I mean, he's won everywhere he's ever been as a coach, and he's moved up the ladder to one. I mean, it isn't like one of those where, okay, you know, you win in lower level, and then when you get to the higher level, you can't quite get that done. No, Caden DeBoer has done that.
And it's why another better choice we have, Jalen Milroe to win the Heisman at 15-1. Same odds as Lamar Jackson to win MVP for Baltimore. Look, I mean, Milroe in a pretty wide open Heisman race, as somebody you know, you're very, very high on, Michael. Similar things we just talked about as far as why you would be optimistic on Alabama. That makes a lot of sense compared to, not that we're down on Lamar Jackson in Baltimore necessarily, but it's just the AFC that, and in general, the hierarchy there, it is so tough to really parse through when you have so many top contenders there for MVP in that side.
Yeah, I mean, I take Milroe here to win the Heisman over Jackson to win the MVP, right? I think to me, Jackson, you know, the best thing that for Jackson would be to win the Super Bowl MVP. I mean, that's what he needs to win. You know, if he's the number two player in the National Football League as the players voted on, he's got to do that at some point, play big in big games. So we're going to see. Look, I think Henry's really going to make him a better player. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I think when they get him under center, I mean, Rich Gannon made such a great point in earlier in the show today about, you know, being under center and how it helps the run game and it opens up more. Well, I don't know if he's going to be under center as much, Lamar Jackson, this year, but he's definitely going to be in the pistol, because if they want Derrick Henry to be successful as a running back, they absolutely, absolutely need him to be in the deep in the eyes so that he can get the ball and move with it. They cannot have him as an offset back in the shotgun formation.
100%. Big year for the Baltimore Ravens. We also talked Chargers here in hour number one with the quarterback injury to Justin Herbert. And this is a fun one. It's Jim Harbaugh's new team versus his old team. Each have actually very similar odds to make their respective playoff. A lot of people down, though, on Michigan. It's not seen necessarily as a rebuild here, Michael, but they'll need to pull an upset or two to get into the college football playoff, plus 115 versus the Chargers at plus 110. I wouldn't want to bet either of these, to be completely honest, but if you're forced to bet one, which one would you side with?
Oh, I'm taking the Chargers all the way. I mean, Jim Harbaugh's got a history of turning teams around, and I think just managing the game. Look, one of the things that you have to be able to do is use common sense, right? It's one of the greatest investment tools that Berkshire Hathaway has proclaimed throughout the history of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger running the company, is we're going to have common sense. And that wasn't common under Brendan Staley being the head coach. And even though he got applauded by everybody in the analytical community, he was stupid. And it wasn't common sense. I think Jim's going to bring common sense. He's going to manage the game. And we saw this in New York a couple of years ago when Brian Daboll just didn't lose games, kept the game close to the fourth quarter. He won 9 games and made the playoffs. They were not very good. And when they had to play against good teams, they got killed. I think Harbaugh's got a better team. He'll manage the game correctly. And I think they're going to be a problem for teams, because the quarterback, as Rich mentioned, is really good.
Sure thing.
And he's going to make some throws, and they're not going to ask him to win the game. Look, how many of those close games did they lose last year?
The majority of them for L.A. The first 8 weeks of the year, every single game right now is lined 3 points or less. So you have a ton of coin flip toss-up games early this year for L.A. My concern is more on on the front seven, the development there, a lot of holes, lots of attrition has happened on the defensive side. It's a team I could easily see struggling early, Michael. We see everything you just laid out for Jim Harbaugh manifesting into the second half of the year. So I just wouldn't want to bet this preseason. I feel like there will be value to get in on LA, maybe with a mediocre start, people kind of sour, and we forget this is a 17-game season. A lot of development happens over the course of a year. But I get that you'd want to lean Chargers versus Michigan there if you're comparing the two futures bets. A lot for us to get to in hour number two. We'll go through what is on Michael's mind, as well as a couple of good sound bites from around the league, a couple that will make us chuckle as well. We'll get into all that when we come back right here on the Lombardi Line.